Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are very pleased to have you listening. Also pleased here to have back on the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, it's always on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. It's an opportunity for people to call in with questions. Maybe you have some kind of problem, something left over from last year. Maybe you're not quite sure how to deal with. Maybe you are thinking about what you want to plant here now in the coming season and you're looking for some suggestions on particular plants. We can do that. We can take questions on just about anything, trees and shrubs, flowering plants, vegetables, houseplants, any and all of that. If you have a problem, just call us and tell us what kind of plant you're dealing with and give us the best description of the problem. And Sandy will see if she can help you out. General questions, certainly all of that, welcome. Here in Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to give us a call, 333-9455 is the number. We also do have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call, you're listening over the air around Illinois, Indiana, use that number, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-9455 or WILL for Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. 9455. Welcome back.
Good morning.
We were just here talking about
lamenting
stories about how things, so many things got seriously nipped, mm-hmm. and what's and what's not. I said I think probably around our yard, most everything seems to be okay. Things here and there definitely were frostbitten, and I was a little concerned, but things are leafing out and going along. Not everything is as good as maybe you'd like, but I think things seem to be pretty much okay.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing I know is some of the, we were mentioning this, just some of the things that normally would flower really well. Maybe you just got a few flowers. You mentioned dogwood. Mm-hmm. I've seen crab mm-hmm. apples and some of those. We got some flowers, but maybe not as big a show as we'd like, those kind of things. So, but it is interesting to sort of see what makes it and what doesn't. And it looks like most things are at least rallying. The one thing I noticed probably more than anything that kind of surprised me a little bit was roses. I had quite a few roses that had just started to already sort of bud out a little bit and were showing a little green growth. And that all got nipped between the wind and the cold and stuff. And now that whole cane died, which surprised me. I thought it would just leaf out again, which often a lot of our deciduous shrubs and stuff and trees will do that. They'll just leaf out on that same stalk. But the stalks themselves actually went ahead and died. So I was very surprised by that. So people may notice they actually have to do some major pruning on the roses to get rid of all that dead stuff. I was very surprised just looking around town and in my own yard.
Well, I have noticed a couple of things. I, for example, in our yard, we have a big old kiwi, and it has been there for a long, long time, and it's always been a very healthy, vigorous plant, and mm-hmm. it started to leaf out. Then when it got cold, those leaves went. Now it's leafing out again, but I have noticed on that plant in particular, there seem to be now a lot of dead stuff that I expect that I'm just, once I'm sure that it is, and I'm pretty sure that you can go up there and you can snap it off and you can tell it's that I think I'm going to have to be pruning some of that dead stuff out. But the plant still seems to be okay.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Most the healthy plants, especially if they've been there for a while, they usually have enough food reserves, they can do that again. But people may have to notice or may have to go out and start doing a little pruning. Most things should probably start to be at least showing some sign. A butterfly bush is always a little slow. There's a few plants that we know are always a little slow in coming up. Butterfly weed is another one slow to come up. So don't assume too much on some of those plants. But if you scratch the stem, you know, with your thumbnail and it's brown, or you break it off, as you mentioned, and it's brown, then you know that part's dead and it's not going to leaf out again. And so you just need to do a little judicious pruning.
Yeah. Do you think it would help to do some fertilizing if you don't usually do that?
I don't think it's a bad idea to go ahead and do that on some things, especially if you know that maybe in some areas that you do have particular problems, or if you have something that needs an acidifying fertilizer or something, you might pay some attention to that. So if you do want to go ahead and fertilize, that's fine. Or use one of the slow-release type fertilizers. That's always good. It will last for a couple months, that kind of thing. So it's not a bad idea to go ahead and do that.
Well, we have several folks here ready to go with questions. Bunch all in Champaign here to start off with. So we will go first to line number one. Hello.
Yep. Hi.
Yeah.
I had a question about getting rid of a plant in my garden. It's something we've battled with since we moved into our house, and it's we've been told a Virginia creeper.
Ah, yes, Virginia creeper.
Oh, we know her well.
She's tough.
She is tough.
I fondly refer to it as the Triffid, the day of the Triffid. I cannot get rid of it at all, and I don't know if, you pull it up and it just breaks off and then goes a million directions from there.
So is this in a planting area or going up the side of your house or wherever?
Everywhere. We've dug up areas completely, and it still seems to come back.
Yeah, I think it probably, as you found out, it just pulling it up doesn't always necessarily help. You could do a number of things if you could get as much as you can of the above ground stuff down, and then actually just try to cover that area up like with black plastic and just consider you're just going to kind of solarize it, just let it kind of work its way through to the point where it doesn't have enough food energy to sprout back up again. Some areas that may work. You might want to try that in some spots, and then just you're going to have to leave that on there probably pretty much all summer, to be honest with you, to make sure that it really goes ahead and gets to the point where it doesn't have enough energy to sprout back up again.
Right.
I don't know how you feel about herbicides, but herbicides are certainly another option.
Can you apply something directly just to that stem? I mean, if I cut off a leaf head and then applied something to the stem so that it sucked it up?
You could certainly do what's called a cut surface treatment, and I think that's what you're describing, where you actually cut the stem and then actually use the herbicide on that cut stem. And you just want to get one of the herbicides. There's some brush killers. There's also some of the non-selective herbicides like glyphosate, Soldier's Roundup. Some of those are out there, too, that you could use for, and certainly brush control killers. Just read the label, and it'll be called the cut surface treatment. And that's probably one of the good ways to do it, in the sense that then it's very controlled, as in you're not spraying, you know, if you have other plants around that you need to protect. But do realize that with these herbicides, most of these will also kill other, you know, plants that you do want to keep. So you have to be very careful on how you apply it, when you apply it, those kind of things.
Okay, but, great. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I think that's the real thing is, if you want to get this plant and really get rid of it, you have to be able to figure out where there's a tap root. There's a basic thing where everything comes from. And if you can find that, it can help. But that's if you have it's really thick and it's running everywhere, you can't really figure out where the heart root of the plant is.
Right. But the more above ground stuff that you can get out of there, the better. You know, if you can really spend some time, you know, pay the kids something to get in there and start pulling some of that stuff out, get that cut out, and then you're just trying to concentrate on like that taproot or those areas where it starts to sprout. But as long as you have these long vines with all this food reserve, it's really tough to get rid of. So you may just have to decide it's a weekend project and you're just really going to pull it all out and then go from there.
I understand there are people who actually plant this on purpose.
They do, believe it or not.
It mystifies me. I don't know.
There are some, but you know, it does have, it's one of those things, it has a nice fall color, you know, it doesn't have a whole lot of insect and disease problems. It's probably one we wish it had more insect and disease problems, but maybe it wouldn't take over as much. It's a vine, you know, it's a vine, grows just about anywhere. So there certainly are some reasons why people have planted in the past, but it needs to come with a warning label. Maybe that's it.
I have noticed that Japanese beetles seem to like it, which is okay with me. They can. I tell them, go ahead, eat all the Virginia creeper you want. It's fine with me.
But it lives through it. That's the problem.
Well, that's right. All right, let's go talk with someone in Champaign here. This is line two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. So I also have a question about growth that I don't want, which is the sprouts that come up from the roots around my crab apple trees. I've got a regular flowering, you know, crab apple and then a sergeant crab apple. And it's just swamped with these sprouts that come up all around it.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and some crab apples are just more prone to it. We have some trees that just naturally do it, and certainly some of the crab apples do that. Unfortunately, there really isn't a whole lot of things to do. Probably the one thing if you can do is just spend a little bit of time and kind of gently dig down and try to get down as far as you possibly can to get it off. And then also if they're not, because you know if you just cut them at the soil surface, they just resprout, and usually a gazillion of them resprout where there used to be one.
Yes.
So if you can dig down and try to actually get it where it's coming off the root itself, so just gently, because you don't want to hurt the tree, but just sort of gently sort of dig down. And then also, if you can, and depending on how big, some of them are just too big to do this, but if they're small enough, like pencil size or smaller, if you can actually pull it off instead of cutting it off, if that makes sense, that actually helps to keep it from resprouting. But if it's been there for a long time and they're really thick, you're not going to be able to do that very easily.
Right, they're hard to pull.
Absolutely. So if you could, the more you can dig down, so gently just take a trowel, dig down and try to get down as much as you possibly can, then that can help. There is a product out there called Sucker Stopper. And I tried it 1 year, wasn't terribly excited about it, didn't feel like it gave the control that I would have hoped. It kind of just sort of slowed them down, it seemed like. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, there is that product out there, and that might be something that you'd want to try. As I said, I just tried it once. I'm willing to try it again. It's a little expensive, but to me, it was worth it if I didn't have to keep doing this.
Right.
But so there is that particular product out there that can be sprayed. But I think your best bet is just to dig down, try to get as much as you can of where it's coming from, and kind of go from there.
Okay, now what I have actually done with great trepidation at first is cut them off and sprayed the cut surface with something like Roundup or something.
No, you don't want to do that.
Well, I know it's bad. You're going to kill the tree.
Yeah.
But the tree hasn't seemed to suffer, but the sprouts keep coming.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so that's, you know.
That's not a good idea. No, that's not a good idea, because it's not the way that product is meant to be used.
Wow.
And there is certainly some concern that it can kill the tree, because it's systemic. It's supposed to go throughout the tree. So you could certainly cause some long-term damage on the tree. So, yeah, I wouldn't try that. I think if you could do that. I've had some people tell me they've had good luck actually putting the landscape barrier right around them.
Yeah.
You know, and then actually they cut them way down and then put landscape barrier. Just in that spot, probably not the best thing in the world for the tree, but if you're doing it in that one spot, maybe not, wouldn't be too bad. I'd be a little bit concerned. I wouldn't put it right smack dab next to the trunk, but that would be one method too that I've heard that some people have tried.
What about is a heavy mulch going to help at all, do you think?
Not really. Hmm. And it's not good to put heavy mulch right next to the trunk of the tree anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's not healthy for the tree. So I think just spend a little bit of time, as I mentioned, kind of digging down, getting as much as you can, and kind of going from there.
Okay.
I know. I know.
Thank you.
I know. Okay. It's one of those.
Let's go to another caller here. Thanks for the call.
Hi.
Line number 3, and this is also someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question concerns the hard freeze we just had. I purchased a beautiful tree, a young tree, from a nursery right before the hard freeze, and now the tree looks like it's not responding to this good weather we're having now, and it looks like it's not going to make it. How can I be sure that a tree is actually dead?
Well, that sounds very philosophical. Somehow. How do you know when it's really dead? If it hasn't started to show something by now, I would be concerned. Now, what kind of tree is this, did you say, or do you know?
A Japanese maple.
A Japanese maple?
Right.
Yeah.
It's famous for its red bark, and it's curling at the bark, too.
Oh, yeah. I think what I would probably do is just check a few of the stems, and if you break them, just gently sort of break them back, and if they crack and they're really dry, then that part is not going to leaf out. I would then go down farther on the stem and actually just take my thumb down and just sort of gently just sort of scrape the bark a little bit, or just scrape the stem just a little bit and see if there's any green underneath there. And if it's brown, then I'd say nothing's going to happen with that. And I would go back to I assume they probably have some kind of warranty on that particular plant, and just tell them what happened. I'm sure you weren't the only one that had that particular problem.
It's not brown underneath the bark. It's kind of like it's not moist at all. It's kind of a bright color.
Is it green at all? Is there any green underneath it?
There's no green in it.
Yeah, I would say with this nice weather, I'd give it some good, if you haven't had any moisture recently, I'd give it a good drink with this nice weather. If something isn't happening in the next few days, then I'd say it's probably not going to come out of it.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Sandy Mason is with us this morning. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And she will do her best, I'm sure, to help you out if you have questions or problems. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. And now we'll go over to talk to someone in Indiana. Line 4. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering if the hard freeze had killed any insect predators that might, you know, help keep the population of the insects that chew on the plants and flowers and that sort of stuff. If there's any concern about that there may be a much larger population of that later on.
Yeah, it really kind of depends. And I haven't heard anything that people are particularly concerned about some of the predators that are out there. It really kind of depends on what stage the insect was at the time. Mm-hmm. Things like the Japanese beetles, the grubs were really deep in the soil. They didn't feel anything, unfortunately. Certainly, maybe some of the insects, like, perhaps something like bagworms and something that's actually out. They wouldn't have been out at that time, but, maybe with that really cold spell that we had late in the season, probably not. But, so it really kind of depends on what stage they are and how much it really affected them. If they were already out, it certainly could have affected them.
Okay.
So it kind of depends on the insect, but I think it's gonna help us and hurt us, and so we're probably back to, even Steven.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. I know that sometime within the next couple of weeks, I'm afraid I don't have the dates right here in front of me, but I think sometime the next couple of weeks, Phil will be here. Phil Nixon will be here. And also Mae Barenbaum, I think, will be here. This is our famous shows that we call Hate the Bugs, Love the Bugs. Phil is the guy to talk to if you
that
want to get
good.
Rid of him, and May's the person to talk to
if
you love him. So one way or another, if people have insect questions, and I'm thinking sometime in the next couple of weeks they're going to be here on the show. So stay tuned, and that'll be an opportunity to ask both kinds of questions. Plant questions, though, again here this morning, and we'll continue. Someone in Downs is next, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Can I do a little plug for McLean County Master Gardeners?
Sure.
We have classes that are open to the public on the second Thursday of every month. So there would be one this Thursday, which is going to be about container and small-scale vegetable gardening. They're from 6:30 to 8:30 at the McLean County Extension Office. They're $10 in advance, $12 at the door, and master gardeners can come for free.
Ooh, that's a deal.
Very good.
So,
hey, thanks.
McLean County
sure.
people. If you call the McLean County Extension Office, we'll send you a list of all the classes.
Great. Thanks.
Okay, fine.
Thank you
very much. Thanks
so
for the
that's
call.
In Bloomington, if people don't know.
Yeah.
All right. And that's it. Now, I don't want to fire up any intense sort of bitter rivalry between Champaign County and McLean County. Is there anything that you'd like to mention?
Well, actually, I was going to mention the fact that there are actually on May 15th and May 17th, a lot of the extension offices are having their gardening telenet series. And this is those things that we do on a fairly regular basis, and it's on using tropical plants to add wow to your garden. Mm-hmm. So it's May 15th at 1 o'clock, May 17th at 7 o'clock, and this is through the telenet system. So just check with your local extension office. It's a live person. There's actually a person doing the program, but they're in one location, and yet you get to see the slides, all the pictures, and get to hear their voice and get to ask them questions. So that's a great opportunity for people to do that. And also this weekend, I know people are always really excited about plant sales, but this weekend the Champaign-Urbana Herb Society is having their plant sale. Also Grand Prairie Friends, Prairie Grove Volunteers are having their plant sale at Lincoln Square Village. So Saturday morning, you can go buy plants. It's
okay.
Always a good thing.
And probably about this point, it's okay to start thinking about planting stuff,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, usually we say by the time Mother's Day rolls around, we're in pretty good shape. There's still always that slight chance of frost. I think clears late till like May 15th, 16th, something like that. I mean, we could still actually have a frost, but it's pretty unlikely once we start getting into Mother's Day.
Yeah, okay. We have someone who, and I don't know if you can answer a question like this, but we have someone who is interested in attracting snakes to their yard. I'm not sure why they would want to attract snakes. I'm nothing against snakes to the yard.
Really?
But
let's talk about your snake phobia.
Now, spiders, that's another thing. Snakes, they don't bother me. Do you know of some things that you could do?
Actually, they like cover. They certainly need a certain amount of cover. So I would say if you had like even things like a rock pile, if you had a rock pile, because rock piles tend to attract things like voles and snakes, depending on what snakes you're looking for. But for a lot of our snakes that we have here, like to eat mice and voles and things. So they're also attracted to those areas. So those kind of protected areas, even if you had like a wood pile. So things like that, I think, are fairly attracted to them. And also, if you have a certain area that's a little bit more natural, where you might let things grow up a little bit bigger. And I think we should always remind people that around here, we're actually very fortunate in the sense that we don't have poisonous snakes around here. When you see snakes out there, they're after the, they're after bugs, they're after mice, they're after a lot of things that we don't necessarily like. So we really don't have the issue. There is one rattlesnake over in the Allerton Park area, but it's so rare and so small that it's not an issue. So yeah. We're pretty fortunate. When you see a snake out there, you just sort of, you know, let him do its thing.
They seem to, occasionally I have seen them in my yard, but it seems like they're very shy.
They really are. They don't want
to deal with you.
Yeah.
And if you see them real quick, or they get the idea you're around, they go, psh, they're just going to be gone.
Yeah, which is kind of, I think it just sort of freaks people out. You sort of see something move really quick and stuff. But just to realize, they really are not after us. They're not. They just as soon go on their merry way. So.
Well, then let us go on our merry way here to Smith College. Arcola is, someone in the Chicago area is their next. Line number two. Hello.
Oh, hi. Hi. Someone gave me a beautiful azalea plant, I'd say 2-3 weeks ago, and it said to keep it well watered, out of direct sunlight. So I had it indoors in indirect sunlight. And a lot of the blooms have died, I'd say half. And yesterday, since it got so warm, I just put it out.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suggest? I've never had an azalea plant, so that's why I'm wondering.
Okay. Well, you certainly can grow, you know, some of them. I don't know if this is supposed to be a hardy one. Did it say something about being hardy? Or
no.
It's more of a florist type azalea, think? Or
yeah.
You got it from a florist?
Yeah.
Well, at that point, because they're not, they're usually, the florist ones generally are not hardy here. And you may want to go ahead and just sort of plant it outside and see if it makes it through the winter, those kind of things. Or otherwise, you'd have to treat it more like a house plant where you actually put it outside for the summer. And then as it gets cooler, actually as it gets cold, it can take some cold temperatures, certainly freezing and stuff. But once it starts to get really cold, then you'd actually have to put it in a protected area like a garage or someplace like that. So you'd have to treat it a little bit differently because it's not going to be hardy, but you could certainly plant it outside for the summertime. They do generally like shadier spots. They like to be cool and moist. They like to be an acidic soil. If you want to put a little sulfur down there, if you want to put a little bit of ammonium sulfate,
I think I'll just keep it without planting.
And that's fine. You could treat it as a house plant because the foliage is nice, and you can kind of go from
fertilize
there.
Fertilize it.
Yeah, I would go ahead and fertilize it. I'd probably use one for acid-loving plants. You might decide you need to repot it because a lot of times they come in fairly small pots. So you might want to pot it to the next size up, that kind of thing. Treat it as a houseplant and enjoy.
And take off the dead leaves.
Right. The dead leaves, and then just pop off the dead flowers is fine.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, sure.
Right, thank you. Now we will go to Arcola. This is Linda.
Yes, I have two questions.
Sure.
One is I did hear that there's a time limit on Japanese beetles that are, in the area that they leave out, like after 7 years or something like that, and not as bad of infestation. And I know that's a bug question.
Oh, that's all right. I think that was somebody probably with some fairly wishful thinking, but I shouldn't put it that way. We have noticed, I should say, and this would be good, again, for I'm sure Phil would love to expound on this as well. We have noticed that the first few years that you get them, they tend to be the worst. And then after you, it seems like, this is just my thought. There's no research behind this as far as I know, that after about the third year, by the time the fourth year rolls around, they don't seem to be as bad in that particular as in your backyard. So it seems like the first 3 years are really bad. Fourth year kind of drops off. And I've talked to a lot of gardeners that seems to keep happening. So that there might be some hope, but just to realize they're always going to be around, but hopefully the populations will drop, that they're worse in the beginning and the populations will drop later.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
Yeah, then something to look forward to.
Next question was on the hydrangeas. When you do have them coming up from the bottom after they've gotten frosted, these are like 5 years old or so, should we go ahead and just trim off the tall stalks, the tall...
Right. The part that's dead? Sure.
Well, it's not dead. It's green inside. But there's no sign of any sprouting.
It's not leaving out at all.
Not now because it got frosted.
Right.
So we just chop those big stalks off and then let it come up from the bottom.
Well, if it looks like they're not going to resprout, because especially I don't know which hydrangea you have, but some of them like Endless Summer actually bloom on new wood and old wood both.
Okay.
So if you leave some of that old wood on and it resprouts, then you get flowers earlier than you would. But if it looks like it's not going to do anything, I mean, you might wait a little bit. But from what I could see, at least on mine, that all those stalks died from last year.
Okay.
So.
Well, I just noted there was green inside. That was.
Well, then you may want to wait and just to see if it's going to go ahead and resprout.
Okay.
But it should in the next few days, I think, with this warm weather. Make sure it's got plenty of moisture, and if something doesn't happen here soon, I suspect it's probably not going to, and then I would just go ahead and cut them off.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
I was kind of wondering that myself, because clearly I have one, and that it is putting up brand new growth, but right from the ground level.
Right.
That
right.
started first, right. And then I noticed, well, here and there, and then there's a bunch of sticks. But in here and there on some of the sticks, it's putting out some leaves. So then I thought, well, maybe I just leave it alone for a little while and kind of see what happens. And then later on, if I have one of these sticks that clearly doesn't seem to be doing anything, well, maybe it doesn't look that great for a while, but I just thought, well, let it alone and just see what it's going to do. I can always cut that stick off later.
Right, right. And so you just kind of have to decide on how it looks. I think, you know, it is one of those things. It depends on which hydrangea it is, because some of them do bloom only on old wood, the wood from the year before, and a lot of the newer ones bloom on both. And so all that means if you lose that top growth from last year, they'll just bloom later. I mean, they'll bloom eventually. Yeah. They'll bloom on that new wood. So you can just kind of decide on how. But, you know, if it just had one stalk that was green, I'd kind of wonder about, how it looks. So I'd probably go ahead and cut it off, even though I thought it might go ahead and flower. That makes sense. But I'm me, and I'm tough.
That's true.
I just cut that thing off.
She's ruthless.
I'm ruthless.
She's going to go over there in McLean County, cut off some of their stuff, too. Let's talk next with someone in Jasper County. This is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a comment and a question. I know every spring some people call in and they say my forsythia isn't blooming and all of that. And I've had a problem with that, too. And then I discovered that wherever there was snow, I had blossoms.
Mm-hmm.
And where there wasn't. And then I noticed that the sparrows just love to sit on that shrub.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to the conclusion that the sparrows eat the buds in the wintertime.
I think it probably has more to do with the snow protecting the buds.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, snow pretty much stays at freezing or a little bit below freezing, and that all that top part that's not protected can easily go, below zero. And so it usually is more of a hardiness problem, to be honest with you. And we have that problem in forsythia, unfortunately, where the buds are just not hardy because the buds are through the winter. It's a good thought, though.
Well.
But I'm not sure. I think we've seen more of a hardiness problem than anything.
Okay. Well, I have a weed that my mother was of the opinion that it came with some nursery plants that she got, and I've identified it as mugwort, and it is a vicious, terrible thing, and it's spreading everywhere, out from where its original area was, and I'm wondering if broadleaf weed killers work on it without killing the grass. That it's going across the lawn toward a shrub, and it's moved over so that it's partly under some white pine trees. And I don't want to use anything that I kill everything that's by.
Right, right, right. But the selective herbicides that we would use for dandelions and some of the broadleaf killers should work on it as well.
You think so? I tried digging it all out.
It
came back with a vengeance.
Yeah, it has an extensive root system, doesn't it?
It has, yeah. And
yes.
They just break off.
They're
real soft. And
Yes. And I would certainly, use everything according to label directions. Underneath the white pines, you're going to have to maybe do more of sort of gently digging it out or doing some other things. But make sure you just read the directions.
It stays there. But the trouble is, if it stays there, it goes up.
Right. Right.
But you think the dandelion
should
work on it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it wouldn't. Would it kill trees? If it's under the area where there are tree roots.
Well, you have to use it according to label directions, and some of the herbicides are not meant to be used around trees.
Okay.
Some of those broadleaf herbicides, depending on which one it has in it.
Okay.
So you have to read according to label directions, and it'll tell you how close you can get to trees. And for a lot of those, they tell you not to use them underneath trees.
Right. Or woody shrubs.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
As well.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. Let's go back and pick up someone here in Belgium. Line four. Hello.
Hello. How are you all today?
Yeah. Pretty good.
I'd like to bring up two items. One, going back to the gentleman with the Japanese maple.
Mm-hmm.
I had a neighbor who has a large tree of them and had lots of seeds. So I gathered up a bunch of seeds last year, and I've looked in the books and stuff, and they said yes, you can start it from seedlings, from seed, and it is hardy in this area to an extent. So I've been trying to start the seeds to grow. I don't seem to be having very much luck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there a secret?
Yeah, we'd really have to check. I'd have to check in one of the books on propagating, or if you have web access, you might check. But unfortunately, for a lot of those seeds, they need some sort of treatment. Sometimes the seeds need to be nicked. Sometimes they have to go through a cold period.
Well, it went through the cold period, but this nicking, somebody told me about scarifying. Is that the same thing?
Right, same thing.
What do you nick?
What do you nick? Yeah. The outside of the seed coat?
Oh, just put like a little knife mark in it or something, or what?
Well, you can use sandpaper. You can use just even an emery board. Or if you don't want to use a knife, obviously you have to be very, very careful using a knife. You don't want to actually cut the seed. You're just nicking the outside seed coat, and that's so the seed can take in water.
Oh.
Now, I don't necessarily know that with Japanese maples, if that's one of their dormancy restrictions. I don't know that. So that's why we'd really have to check, or if you want to check in a plant propagation book that's specific where you can actually look up that particular species, and they'll tell you that it needs, you know, and sometimes it's fairly elaborate on some of these seeds.
Oh, I see. Because I'd like to hide a neighbor, and these little trees look like they do just the same.
Hey, I got a bunch of sugar maple seedlings you can have.
No, they get tall. You want the shorter ones.
They start all over the place.
Yes, they're easy to start. The other point, the individual that was looking for snakes, nobody really ever tries to attract them, but usually the best thing to attract them is just good habitat, whatever that may be, whether, like you say, it was a woodpile or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And birds make a nice food source for them. So anything that's nice like that, they come to.
Build it and they will come, I guess.
That's right.
Now, some people would not find that attractive, but
yeah,
we won't go there, I guess.
That's odd, but, you know, that's fine. I enjoy snakes. Well, you take care.
Thank you.
Sandy Mason is here with us. She stops by every month on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. If you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, vegetables, flowering plants, house plants, any and all of that, if you have a problem, you're looking for a suggestion on particular plant for a particular spot, just give us a call, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana listeners, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Vermilion County, and this is line number 2. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have questions about some garden herbs and also my tree peony.
Mm-hmm.
First, I have some volunteer dill coming up, and my chives are blooming.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do to keep them producing as long as possible so I can use them in my cooking? Do I just keep them haircutted short?
The chives themselves or the flowers? The chives?
Each. I guess if you'd address the chives and then the dill. And also, are the chive flowers edible?
Sure. Oh, they're wonderful. They taste just like, actually, they're a milder form of the leaf. And they're so pretty because they're nice and pink and you can pull them apart and they look really pretty. Mm-hmm. So you can eat the flowers. And actually, just the way with chive, because, you know, usually the younger stuff just, you know, tastes better because it's milder, a little bit more tender. And actually, usually what I do, as soon as they're finished flowering, I just give them a heavy haircut and just really cut them back and let that new growth come back up. And you can keep doing that on them. They're really pretty tough. You know, if you want that new growth, which just tends to be a little bit nicer to eat.
So just treat them like grass.
Pretty much. You're right. I never thought about it that way, but pretty much. But just go ahead and let them flower and enjoy and eat the flowers and all that good stuff. But all the new growth that comes up is going to be much better for you. For the dill, you just go sort of let it go. You know, it is an annual, so you have to let it reseed itself. So however you want to go from there. Are you wanting the leaves? Is that what your comment was?
Like potato salad later in the summer. So do you keep cutting off the tops so they don't go to
seed? Yeah, dill's kind of funny that way. You really, your best bet is just to have new plantings just keep coming up. So if your best bet, if you truly wanted that, was to periodically every couple of weeks just sow some more seeds. So
not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, however you want to do it, but that's the best way to do it because then you have that new growth coming up. And there's actually a newer variety called fern leaf dill that tends to have a lot more leaves on it, doesn't seem to flower quite as fast, those kind of things. Because it's really hard to try to keep them vegetative, as in producing leaves. They just want to, they're an annual, and they just want to go to flower.
Okay. Then, the tree peony, it's just finishing blooming. And if I want, you've told me before that they bloom on old wood, but I don't want it to get bigger and bigger. Should I be cutting it back after flowering?
Yep. You certainly could, right after flowering. That's a good thing for any of the plants that were that are just finishing flowering now. So if you have lilacs or scythia or any of those things that bloom on old wood, certainly tree peonies, that would be the time to prune them, is right after flowering.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. And let's see, next person in line would be Matt Tu in line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have two questions. One has to do with my tomato plants. I put out 8 or 10 tomato plants the past several days, and put cages around them, and birds have, I don't know what kind of bird, and I don't know when they do it, but I've gone out, and there's nothing left but stubs on about half a dozen of them.
The birds are picking off the leaves?
Off the leaves. I thought it was a squirrel.
And it's not rabbits or squirrels?
Well, I thought it was a squirrel, but I haven't had any squirrels around for several days, and I haven't seen any rabbits. And birds, there are a lot of birds. The last 2 years, we've had a small bird bath, and we've attracted a lot of different birds. And I just wonder if you have some suggestions how I can keep them from doing that.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the wildlife really like young plants like that, and they tend to pick on those more when they're young. And then as they get bigger, they don't pay too much attention to them. So I think probably your best bet is really going to have to get, if you can do some, like, I know you have cages, but if you could get some like finer mesh chicken wire or something like that, where you can just sort of protect them just for this short period of time until they get some more growth on them. I think that's going to be your best bet, really, for all those things. You could try some scare devices. If you've got cages, you could certainly use some, you know, everything. I've had people use old CDs as scare devices or something to try to scare animals away. And sometimes that does work, but I think your better bet is just to fence them in just for that short amount of time until they get bigger.
Or just put a little screen around it or netting.
Yep. Yep, and you could certainly even use the bird netting if you got some of that around, you know, that really fine stuff. But it tends to actually do a pretty good job even on rabbits and things.
And as the plants get larger, then just take it off?
Yep, I would. I have a feeling it's strictly a new thing. Wildlife seem to really like those young plants, and the leaves are more succulent, all that kind of good stuff. So usually by the time the plants start to get bigger, you don't really notice it so much. So
I was going to go out and plant some beans today and some zucchini seeds, and some of my seeds are over a year old, I noticed, and I wondered, just overplant those seeds? They haven't been in a freezing temperature. They've all been inside all winter.
Then actually they should be fine. You probably have noticed that the germination rate's a little bit lower, but I still suspect it's probably 80-85% germination rate. So just figure on just what you said, just a little bit heavier. I wouldn't do it too much heavier, but just a little bit heavier, but those should be fine.
Do the same thing with like lettuce seed and spinach seed?
Yeah, lettuce and spinach, it seems the germination rate seems to drop more drastically on them. So I'd really probably plant them fairly thick. They just don't seem to last as long as like beans and zucchini and some of those. So, but you still be able to use them, but just to realize I'd probably put them fairly thick.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. What about grass seed? Can you use last year's grass seed and expect that you're going to get a reasonable amount of germination?
You should. So much of it depends on how it was stored. You know, if it was in freezing temperatures out in the shed and it got hot and cold and hot and cold, then your germination rate is probably not very good, and you'd probably be better off just going ahead and get some fresh stuff. But if it was in a garage that was, you know, and it was fairly kept fairly even temperature, you really should be in pretty good shape. Probably, again, have to do a little bit thicker than you might normally do it, but you still should get some germination out of it.
Okay. Next, we'll talk with someone in Georgetown, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple of questions. We've had a Bradford pear tree probably 5 or 6 years. It has never, ever bloomed.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a male and a female of that tree?
No.
Or is there something that is keeping it from blooming? Of course, this year it did get frosted and looked terrible because the leaves were just coming out, but it's all leafed out now and everything, but it never has ever bloomed.
And you've had it 5 or 6 years?
Right.
And it's growing just fine?
Oh, yeah. It looks just fine.
Then, you know, I've noticed on those particular ones, and actually I've even on some of the other trees, but particularly with Bradford pears, some of them just are just, they just do not flower well. They just don't flower well. They try to flower early and they get frosted. There seems to be some variability there, to be honest with you. And I've seen some that have really great fall color, and then another Bradford have really lousy fall color.
This one doesn't have much fall color either.
See, I'm thinking kind of you've got a dud there.
Pardon?
I'm thinking you've got a dud. I think
nice
you've got the lemon.
It's lovely.
Yeah, and I will tell you, to be honest with you, we've had so many problems with Bradford pears busting apart in storms as they age. Huh. This may be nature's way of telling you need a different tree.
Maybe.
To be honest with you,
when they bloom, they're just gorgeous.
They are gorgeous, but what we found is by the time they get to be about 20, 25 years old and they're looking really good, they have so many stems in them. You know, all the stems come out in the same spot,
right,
that they just bust apart. And you can look from house to house to house throughout the cities, and you'll find these half trees, and almost every single one of them is going to be a Bradford pear. So I would tell you, before you spend too much more time,
right,
I'd be thinking about actually picking out a different plant, to be honest with you.
And a couple other questions.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best way to fertilize, the hydrangea, the iris, mm-hmm, and the clematis?
Mm-hmm. For most things, it's usually right after they flower is fine for a lot of those, or early in the spring. Sometimes people do both. Early in the spring, especially things like hydrangeas. Maybe the other ones I'm not quite so concerned about fertilizing them, but hydrangeas, something maybe if you're trying to get a blue flower out of them, you know, some of the blue and pink, I might do it in the spring. And then also right after they flower, that kind of thing. So we're fertilizing them more, try to get that blue color, that kind of thing, grow.
Just an ordinary flower, garden fertilizer, or anything special?
Yeah, for the rest of the flowers, I would go, you know, just a plain old 10-10-10, 12-12-12. And also realize for a lot of the perennials and stuff, they really do better if they aren't fertilized a lot.
Okay.
Things like roses and certainly hydrangeas really respond well to fertilizer. The other ones, sometimes they tend to get more leggy, and they just assume not have a lot of nitrogen.
And is there anything on that clematis to, you just kind of got to get in and prune out that dead? Like right now, I think most of the flowering is coming out, but there's a lot of dead that didn't come out again. So you just get in there and dig out what you can dig out, or...
Well, ideally, it'd be good to do it in the spring. Well, depending on which one it is, but usually in the springtime is a good time. I know things are gotten a little farther along now, but in the spring, that's usually a time to really give them really do a lot of your pruning.
Just go ahead and prune. I've always hated to prune because then I'm thinking I'm pruning away some of the good that's going to come out, but it's okay just to prune them and let them, then you can shape them better and so forth.
Yep. Because otherwise, they're really, and you're not going to necessarily prune them really heavy. You might just prune them down to 2.5-3 feet. You know, they're still fairly long.
Okay.
But you get rid of a lot of that stuff at the top.
Because now it's kind of hanging out, kind of bunchy hanging out.
Yeah.
I hated to prune it. I was afraid I was going to prune away the good stuff that'd be coming out. So.
Right, right. So for the big flowered ones, generally we'd leave them fairly long. For some of the really small flowered, like the autumn blooming clematis, we'd actually do a heavy prune on it.
Okay.
For that little bitty flower that comes later.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll keep going here. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's with us once a month. She answers lawn and garden care questions. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and we have about 5, 6, 7 minutes left and several other callers here, so we'll just continue. The next is in Champaign and line 2. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of deja vu, but I thought maybe some new innovations have come along since the last time I called in. Creeping Charlie, is that the stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It didn't sound very encouraging.
It's right up there with Virginia Creeper.
It's right up there with Virginia.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's called Creepy, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything with
creepy.
Creep in the
yeah,
name,
really
you got to watch out for.
It's like, you know, I'm thinking about drawing a battle line. It's maybe about 10% of the backyard and driving me crazy. Is there any non-toxic stuff that, you know, like heavy motor oil or something?
Did you say non-toxic? There really isn't anything new under the sun when it comes to Creeping Charlie. It's probably the same things that we've mentioned in the past with certainly, is this your lawn, I take it?
Yeah.
Certainly with broadleaf herbicides, they will help, like the dandelion-type killers and stuff, but I will tell you, one application never does it completely, so it's one of those where you really have to read the label. If it says in 6 weeks you can reapply it, then I would reapply it. So you really have to, generally one application is not going to do it if you want to go that route. The other route would be, you know, at least it's green and it's got a pretty flower on it. Some people just decide that they're just going to, you know, that's going to be their ground cover, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. It's not great when it starts getting in your flower bed and taking everything over. So you kind of just have to decide from there. I'd also wonder why the, you know, is the grass not growing well? Is this
well, what's happened is that I've owned this house for couple years, and the previous owner decided to put in a above ground swimming pool and took out a huge tree, unfortunately, because the leaves are getting in her pool. But you know, she shifted the dirt, and you know, there's not much dirt over there. You know, that's a problem. The other one is, you know, I read your articles from time to time, and so the best time to plant grass would be in the fall, wouldn't it?
That's the absolute best time. You certainly could do it. We're getting kind of late. Usually April is a good time to go ahead and do that, too, so we're getting kind of late into spring. But
I was thinking maybe just if I got it at least under control and then just would plant a lot of grass over there or something. Is there any kind of grass that would choke it out and maybe look a little better but not as bad?
No, not really. I think the big thing is to try to get some, you know, something else growing there as well, because as long as you have bare soil, you're going to have weeds coming in. So you got to have to, you know, you kind of have to decide on if it's going to be lawn, then you need to figure out, you know, why isn't the grass growing well? What do I need to do to get good grass growing here? That kind of thing. We really don't have anything that's going to necessarily choke it out. They sort of just fight each other. I mean, I don't know. Could you try Virginia creeper fight each other out?
Virginia creeper, there's going to be Charlie duke it out.
I think the Virginia creeper would probably win that one, but there really isn't any kind of lawn grass that's necessarily going to choke it out. But
well, maybe it could be a duel out there. I could hear fighting it out.
Yeah, battle lines, I guess.
Okay, well, you know, it continues.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck. Go here to next caller, and let me see. I think that would be in Urbana, and line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, we have 5 acres. We've planted about 300 trees on.
Wow.
But, we're crazy. But my question is, oh, and by the way, I have a dud Bradford pear, too, apparently,
see?
Like the other lady. But our burning bushes, and it isn't the frost that has hurt them, because they looked this way before the frost came. They've always been very vigorous. And this year, several of them just haven't, they've hardly leafed out at all, and some of the leaves are withered and strange-looking, and I wondered what's wrong with them.
So how old, these have been there for a while?
No, we planted them 5 years ago when we moved here.
Okay, and they looked fine up until now, or
been
up until this year?
Great up till now.
Okay. Well, I guess a couple of things I would, and not just the cold, but, you know, we had a lot of wind there for a while, which really kind of hit a lot of things as well. I think the other thing I would look for is that rabbits love to chew on them and mice love to chew on them. And I just make sure that I would look at the stem, kind of where the soil line and the stem meets, and make sure that you haven't had some damage there from wildlife, because that would certainly do it as well. So
okay.
I would look for that. At that point, I'm not sure what else might be going on. It sounds like it's more of an environmental thing, probably more than anything. And so I think it's like we've talked about all morning, and that kind of wait and see if anything's going to leaf out, and then start doing some judicious pruning just to make them look nicer.
Someone mentioned a fungus. Could they have that problem?
Sometimes they get powdery mildew, but that shouldn't be causing this necessarily. At least I haven't seen a fungus that would cause what you're describing.
Well, we do have rabbits. So
I would certainly be, and rabbits love burning bushes. They just love them. So I would really look at the base of the plant, see if you haven't had some damage over the wintertime.
Okay, great. I shall do that.
Sure. Good
Thank
luck.
You.
Right.
See, we get one more to Marshall. This would be line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I've got a, it's like some kind of a flowering crab tree, and every year sprouts come up all around it, and is there anything you can do to keep them from coming up, or you just mow them off, or what do you do?
Yeah, and unfortunately, there really isn't a whole lot you can do with those suckers that just keep popping up. It is one of those things that's common on some trees, especially crab apples. And just digging down and trying to go down as far as you possibly can, rather than just digging them, cutting them off at the soil surface, dig down, find out where they're coming from, and then pull them off if you can. If you can't pull them off, then just cut them down as far as you possibly can. But there really isn't anything. We don't have, you know, you don't want to use Roundup or any of the herbicides. There is a product called Sucker Stopper that you could possibly use if you want to try that. But unfortunately, it's one of those things you just really have to mow them off or cut them off. But it'd be better if you could dig down and find out kind of where they're going from and then get them from the source.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about, is there, I've got some iris and there's some kind of a bug getting into the bloom. Is this something common? I've never had it before.
It's actually getting into the bud itself or the...
Yeah, they're chewing off the bud. I don't see any damage anywhere else.
And you're seeing a little caterpillar or something? Or
I haven't seen anything yet. I have to admit, I haven't looked really, really close because I just noticed it and I didn't have time to inspect it. But something is, and it's not in every one, but in several. So.
Well, you might kind of look around and see if there isn't a caterpillar or something. I'm not aware of anything that necessarily goes after the buds on irises, but, you know, that's certainly always a possibility. So that would be the thing I would look for. And there probably isn't a ton of them, is my guess, and you could probably just use that mechanical squishing method to get rid of them. But that would be probably the thing I would look for, because more than likely, if it's an insect, you're going to see it around there still.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right, thank you. I think we're going to have to stop, and I'm really sorry we have one more person we can't take. Sandy will be back again next month. In the meantime, every Thursday, 7 o'clock on our companion station, WILO-TV, there's a program called Illinois Gardener. Diane Nolan is the host, and it is a live show, and they have different people every week. Sandy's been on the show, mm-hmm. other folks from the university and who work in the various kinds of garden centers and landscaping companies around Champaign-Urbana. They take calls. So if you have a question, that's also another opportunity for getting your questions answered. And then people also can get in contact with whoever is their closest extension person and get some help that way. Thank
sure.
you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Sandy Mason is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, she's here, and we do these lawn and garden care shows.